You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Linda, I think it's time to reimagine law enforcement and public safety. What say you?
Well, that seems to be the new buzzwords that everybody's talking about right now, to reimagine public safety and law enforcement.
The new progressive left rhetoric of restorative justice is reimagining. So why don't we just take a few minutes and do that?
Okay.
You start.
Well, I would start with not their reimagining, but let's do Linda's version of reimagining.
Okay, I'll tell you what, that's a great idea. You do Linda's reimagining, and I'll take their side and reimagine, and we'll both unimagine their reimagination.
Okay, you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear Linda's version.
Well, I'm going to reimagine public safety and law enforcement with really good quality officers that are really well trained, that get continuous training and as much training as they should have and as they need to protect the public and to protect themselves. I am going to reimagine that the police departments are supported by their chiefs and by their city councils and by their city managers and by their governors and by the federal government and by the public. And I'm going to imagine that when you call the police, they come and they help take care of the problem, diffuse the situation, or if it can't be diffused, do what needs to be done. And that is my reimagination of what I think needs to be done, which I'm sure is polar opposite to what you're going to say.
Well, wow, Linda, what a wonderful altruistic, idealistic idea of what the future of law enforcement would be. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen, not even near going to happen. And I'm going to tell you why, because defunding is also part of the progressive left rhetoric and the Marxist rhetoric. So how are you going to have officers better trained so they can do a better job when you are defunding the training effort? And as a matter of fact, you're not only defunding the training effort, but the recruitment effort. So how's that going to take place? Well, in my reimagination of law enforcement and public safety, we're not going to have officers respond to such things as people experiencing agitated, chaotic events, people that have gone off the deep end with mental health problems, people that are suicidal, including suicide by cop intent people. We're not going to deal with homeless issues anymore. We're not going to deal with domestic violence. And in the People's Republic of Berkeley, California, apparently they're going to get rid of all the traffic cops and we're going to have civilians making car stops.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to handle that when that's one of the most dangerous stops that can be made. But, you know, we're going to see. So when they are imagining in their reimagination wonderland, I think that they're imagining, as you say, an altruistic la-la land of people that are all getting along and
everybody's
working
cooperating
together. Yeah. This is not going to happen. This is never going to happen. The people that are out to do bad things are never going to participate in this in the way that, you know, the good people will. So the good people who always do the right thing are going to continue to do the right thing. The people who don't do the right thing are going to continue to do the wrong thing. And now they will do it with much more freedom and many more people will be harmed by it. Why I say that I am reimagining, because we've lost the world that I described. We've lost the ability to hire really good and really strong officers because they've dumbed everything down. They've made it more difficult. They've taken away the funds. They've taken away the training. And all for so few, Ron, such less than 1% of the entire police force in the country doing anything that people disagree with. However awful it is still that 99% of these guys are stand-up guys that are there when you need them.
And now, you're being kind of sexist, Linda, because they're a
men
lot
and
of
women.
Thank you.
You know,
just keeping it real.
And I'm not sexist because I'm still from the old school where I can say guys and incorporate everybody in that. Because don't forget, I was one of the guys too. And I never had a problem with anybody saying that. Hey, and I still don't.
Let me ask you a question. When you were on the job, did they call it, did your badge say police woman or did it say police officer? Because I know you were a long time ago, like me, you started. Did it say police woman
or
did
it say police officer? Officer?
Okay, so they had changed that.
So anyway, the thing that has happened and is happening is not happening because of George Floyd. It's happening because George Floyd was a moment in time that was that match that lit the fuse, that started the fire. But that those embers have been here for a long time. There have been people waiting for those moments. Just like there are people that, for as long as I can remember, wait for an event to happen so that they can go loot places, right? They literally wait for that spark to happen, and then they run and they loot places. And they go across the country to do it. They don't just stay in their own hometowns. So this is what's happening now. And when now the new word that everybody's using is this reimagined police work, doesn't that just sound so pleasant and just so peaceful that we're just going to reimagine this and we're going to have, you know, this wonderful la la land? This is not going to happen, people. This is not going to be the way that it is. And one more thing is the biggest insult for me, the biggest insult is our own politicians forwarding this, painting Black Lives Matter on roads and murals and things for everybody. As though, you know, they're making us unequal again. Okay, we cannot be making one race, one culture, one religion more equal than others. This is what they're doing, and they're also letting people out over and over and over. And I do want to have a conversation about them letting them out of prison in a bit, because that's really, really frost my socks.
Wow. Well, I just want to kind of put some things out there, because the people that are, you know, forwarding, you know, this rhetoric about reimagining law enforcement, first of all, none of them have ever done the job, and they know nothing about law enforcement or police practices. Because if they did, like in the People's Republic of Berkeley, they wouldn't suggest that civilians, that they're going to get rid of their police officers who make traffic stops. In other words, they're not going to have a traffic division. Nobody's going to pull cars over and write tickets or do anything like that. They're going to have civilians do that. The problem with that is actually twofold. Number one, a traffic stop is legally a detention. Right? And it's covered by the Fourth Amendment, which protects everybody against unreasonable searches and seizures. So in order to be able to pull somebody over, you have to be an authorized and certified law enforcement officer. So the civilian thing and the law enforcement thing, those don't match, because civilians cannot make car stops. The next thing is, and you alluded to that, 25% of all police officers are injured and killed on car stops. Now, remember we talked about their going to send mental health professionals and social workers and negotiators and crisis intervention people to domestic violence. You and I both know that another 25% of law enforcement officers are injured and killed in domestic violence situations. And you know you can have all the great negotiation skills in the world. You can be a phenomenal de-escalator. But a domestic violence arrest is mandated throughout the United States. There are, I don't know, our listeners maybe not know this, you and I know it, but there are very few crimes that mandate an arrest. As a matter of fact, it's not even a mandated arrest to take somebody in for homicide, for rape, for kidnapping, for armed robbery, but it is a mandated arrest to take somebody into custody for domestic violence, for child abuse, and elderly abuse, because it's a political crime. Not only that, all of our studies have shown that if you don't take somebody into custody, worse things can befall the domestic partner. So we're going to send civilians out there for that?
You know, I'm okay if they want to send a civilian with the police or send somebody, not necessarily with them, but at the same time, send them, and if they're specially trained in mental health, that's great, because we have often said policemen are not trained in mental health.
Not that, sufficiently.
That's not their job.
Right.
So I don't mind if they send somebody, but you sure as heck need a policeman there, because these things go downhill so fast and so horrifically that it just has to be. And I think, sadly, that society is going to find that out. Just like they found out in the Chad or Chaz or whatever that chap, I don't know what it was.
Chaz thing? Sure, the autonomous zone.
The autonomous zone. That they found out that just wasn't all peaches and cream either, was it? It wasn't the summer of love that the mayor thought it was going to be. More than one person was murdered there, and young people. So no, this is not going to work. And the foolishness and the naivete of our politicians is astounding to me.
Well, you know what I thought was really interesting, now that you bring it up, and we're talking about social workers and negotiators.
It was CHOP. Sorry about that.
Well, it started out with CHAZ, and then I think they did a focus group, and they decided that that wasn't a great term, so they turned it to CHOP. But anyway, what I thought was kind of interesting is, with all this restorative justice, touchy-feely rhetoric, reimagine law enforcement, when Mayor Durkan decided to get rid of the CHOP zone, to break it up, she didn't send in negotiators. She didn't send in social workers. She didn't send in arbitrators, right? Or crisis intervention people. Who did she send in? She sent in the popo, heavily armed, armored up, riot shield popos. Because what do you think would have happened if social workers and civilian negotiators and crisis intervention and mental health, what if people would have gone in there and asked those people to leave? I mean, pretty please.
I would have loved to have seen that. I wish she would have done it.
But see, that's why it's rhetoric. It's right. Just empty, feel-good rhetoric. But the problem that I have with this is that they are going to defund law enforcement. They are committed in many cities to defunding law enforcement so they can play these socio-criminal feel-good experiments, and people are going to get injured and killed.
Yes.
Law enforcement will have been defunded, and then we're going to have this experiment for about a year until it totally collapses.
Well, and at that point in time...
And how many people will be injured and killed?
And that will happen, and then you will not have officers that are trained to come in immediately, because guess what? There's a training period for officers. They must go through an academy that is grueling, and it's not just running and jumping and using physical force. There's a lot of mental stuff going on in academies. And you know, when these people make fun of the training that officers go through to become a police officer, it's no joke. It's no joke of training. It's a significant investment in yourself, in your community, and it's a lot of learning.
Now, you know, I have a lot of respect, as I've said many times, for the famous author of The New Yorker, and he's written some books in there. I have a couple of his books in my library, Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes.
Okay. And so Malcolm called me up, and he's written about officer-involved shootings and things like that. And he was nice enough to call me up to do some honest research about officer-involved shootings and how do police respond to these things? And he read a lot of my research. You know, we're both fans of each other's work. And remember, we brought him to the learning lab at Martin LA and Associates and ran him through some scenarios, four different scenarios as a police officer. And each one was a little bit more difficult than the next, but all of them could have been solved. Every single one of them could have been solved. Two peacefully, two not so peacefully. And unfortunately, when Malcolm played the police officer, and, you know, truth be told, he had zero training. I mean, I gave him like a 15-minute workup on the use of force. Besides him reading my work, we turned him loose, and he got killed the first two times and then twice unnecessarily shot and killed a suspect. And that was a real epiphany for him. And he did produce a wonderful program. He does a history, kind of a history program. I forget the title of it, but people can Google Malcolm Gladwell and look at the one with Dr. Ron. And that was a big wake-up call for him. So imagine thousands of Malcolm Gladwell type people who are very intelligent, might have great verbal skills, thrown into something like that in the dark, in a scary environment with scary people, people under the influence, drugs, alcohol, people that are armed. And look how quickly, as Malcolm learned, things can turn ugly and dangerous and violent and deadly.
Well, they surely can. And the thing that I think that people who've not been in that position, I think that they don't understand. In fact, I know that they don't understand how fast things happen. They are split seconds that you have to make these decisions. And officers have to rely on their training. They don't have time to stand there and think the whole thing through. They just don't have that kind of time.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do and they should.
Yes.
But many times, like you said, Linda, these things go down so quickly and so unexpectedly. And you know what you don't know about people can hurt you or kill you. And you can have all the education, all the little fancy certificates, the doctorate degrees, the master's in social work, and you can be a wonderful communicator, and you can be dead really quick.
Yes. Yeah. It's just that extra few seconds to think about something sometimes. So that is why training is so very, very important, because it lets them use that training in those instantaneous situations.
Right. And you can't defund, because when you create the situation that the radical left, the progressive left, and the Marxists are creating in this country, there no longer is a resonance for people wanting to enter the law enforcement, you know, career.
Exactly.
And so what they have to do to keep people in law enforcement or to get people to join law enforcement is eventually they're going to have to reduce the education requirements, the criminal background requirements, I mean, a lot of things. And you are going to end up with a much lower trained and experienced police officer that literally you've given the power of life and death to. And is that the law enforcement and public safety environment that you are reimagining?
Not at all. And I'm going to make you a cup of coffee, and I have some more to say about this.
That's fantastic.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, well, now that we're coffeeed up, you know, I was thinking about this comparison of what we were just talking about with defunding law enforcement and with making everything seem to be, just more nice and flowery, like they're talking about, which to me is just an incredibly stupid thought. But go back a few years, Ron, to what when they started in the schools, and they started you can no longer play dodgeball, and everybody has to get a trophy, and no more spelling bees because you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Look at what we did. It's the same principle that we did there with our kids in school, and it did the kids no good. In fact, we made a generation of all those protesters that you saw out there, the entitlement, the unrealistic expectation from life, that life should give them something instead of them giving life something?
Well, you know, I love the vein, the direction that you're going in right now, because it was funny, because just before we were kind of preparing for our discussion this evening, I'm on Facebook and I'm watching a video that somebody sent to me, and it's two unfortunate officers that happened to be sitting in their car. And this condescending white female comes up to them, and she wants to argue with them. She wanted to initiate an argument, and of course, these guys are not stupid. They're not going to fall for that. But her argument and her condescension was just disgraceful. And she said, you know, I want to have a conversation because you people, meaning the police, have said, and you believe that all lives matter. Is that what you believe? And of course the officer said, well, of course all lives matter. You know, we're here to protect lives, all lives. And she said, well, I just want you to know, because you don't know, apparently, that that's very offensive. And the officer said, all lives matter is offensive. And she said, absolutely. All lives matter is offensive. You need to say Black Lives Matter. And why can't you say that? He said, well, I can absolutely say that. But he didn't say it.
He
right?
did say, well, I
well,
saw
he did say, well, he said
Black Lives Matter and all lives matter.
Right, that's actually true what he did say. But, you know, can you imagine, these are trained officers, and they're trained in de-escalation, and they're not going to take the bait from a condescending person. So I would like to take that condescending white stuffy female and put her out on the street, reverse roles, and put
her absolutely.
Out on the street with somebody who's under the influence of drugs, doesn't like her because she's a female, doesn't like her because she's white, doesn't like it because they think she's privileged, right, educated, and spits in her face, calls her the B word, and tells her to F off. And maybe slaps her in the face after he spits in her face. So how do you think a person with the education that you've been talking about, right? The safe spaces, the no dodgeball, no physical contact sports, everybody gets a blanket and a sucky toy, everybody can be offended, you know, right? And stuff like that. How do you take that protected person with zero life experience, because we did that to them in school, and how do they come out and play the role as the new generation of law enforcement, the new imagination law enforcement officer?
Well, that's what's so astounding to me as I look at all of these kids doing all of these protests and the things that they're saying, the vile, vile things that they're saying and doing. Is that they honestly have no clue as to what life is about. And a lot of that is the fault of the schools from way back and all the way up through college, especially where you have, you know, right now you have our white liberal professors calling the police white supremacists. I mean, there is nothing further from the truth in my experience and probably your experience of that statement. We all get along. We all got along. Officers still get along no matter what color they are. They work together. There is not the kind of social, I don't know what you'd call it, but the social engagement that they think that there is not what it is. They just don't know what they don't know.
Well, you know, and I think New York City is a great example. And I heard a sergeant who's the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association talking about New York City Police Department, and 53% of the department is diverse, matching the minority community or the cultural community or the religious community. And of course, I think they have something like 158 different cultures, races, creeds, religions. It's truly a melting pot. And, you know, you and I have been to New York several times. I think it is, I probably is the biggest melting pot in all of the United States, and maybe Miami Beach, the second most one. But just imagine, you know, these people going out, meaning getting law enforcement jobs or working as civilians in this new imagination law enforcement or public safety environment. And I'm going to be a bit prophetic here, because I found that two different types of people use excessive force. Number one, there are bullies, although it's a very, very small percentage. Bullies use excessive force. And the other thing, scared people use excessive force. Scared officers use excessive force. And by the way, scared civilians use excessive force. And that's why, as an instructor with civilians as well as law enforcement, I spend so much more time on civilians, talking them to about safety and de-escalation and things like that, because I always worried that with a modicum of training, they're going to get scared and they're going to pull the trigger on somebody.
Right.
Well, I'm always concerned about that. And that's why we spend so much training in that area.
Well, in New York City, you have this unique, well, I guess it's really not unique, but you have this situation that you have Bill de Blasio, who has completely ruined that city as much as he possibly could.
They haven't seen a mayor ruin New York City since the days of Mayor Dinkin.
And there's some background. You were telling me some background on Bill de Blasio, and he has some Marxist.
Yeah, I mean, it's out there, but it's so interesting. And it's totally vetted, and you can check in Snopes and all of that. Bill de Blasio isn't his real name. He is another name. His first name, William, is his first name, but his other name is not de Blasio at all. Apparently, he had a bad relationship with his father, who was a World War II or Vietnam veteran, and I think it was a World War II vet, and drank heavily, was an alcoholic, divorced the mother, subsequently contracted cancer, and actually killed himself, committed suicide. Bill did not like his dad, so he took his mom's maiden name. So the mother's name is de Blasio. So he changed his name. So I don't hold that against him.
No.
But what I do hold against him is the fact that he was a huge supporter of the Marxist, communist, Sandinista revolutionary movement in Nicaragua. That if you remember, in those days, President Reagan fought against. And so when he got married, he was such an avowed Marxist that he and his wife honeymooned in Cuba, a communist nation. And he has, until recently, has always been a person that the Marxist ideology resonates with him. Now he's given it just a little bit of pushback, but only because there's more people in the media that know about his Marxist background. But when you take a look at all of the horrible things that he's done, and I don't want to monopolize this conversation, but all of the horrible things that he's done with the police department, do you think that's coincidental?
Oh, no. And his wife, he's in a mixed marriage. His wife has said that her idea of nirvana is to have no police and get rid of all the police in New York. And, you know, the times that we've been there, we've met many police officers in New York, and I just think that they are the most professional and the greatest guys in the country.
And gals, they're so much fun to be with.
They really are. They just are so good at what they do. And they don't make a lot of money either,
no.
Compared to where they live. So to live in New York City is very, very expensive. A lot of these guys are having to, you know, live with their folks, live with other family members, commute hours to get there. I mean, this is not an easy job for them, but it comes from the heart, and they truly wanted to make that city the best. And then you have Bill de Blasio painting this huge Black Lives Matter on the street in front of the Trump Tower. just to thumb his nose at Trump. I don't, whatever, you know, flips his donut is great, but.
Yeah. You know, but I want to, and I want to take this thing into a little bit of a direction, talking about, and I'm kind of done about reimagining law enforcement. I think we've
I like my reimagination of
law. Well, you know what? I'd love your reimagination if that was at all possible, but I think those days are done. I don't think we'll ever see those days again. And that's why there are law enforcement officers by the thousands bailing out of this job. And I think I mentioned it in one of our previous coffee conversations. And I said, Caliber Press recently did a survey with 10,000 of their subscribers. And they found that 93% of the 10,000 officers, they were just police officers, said, I would not encourage nor recommend law enforcement as a career path for someone.
But somebody has to do it. And it's just like, you know, what they did with Obamacare when so many doctors started quitting and finding other careers. I mean, we are taking all of the people that we need to make our society work, our police officers, our physicians.
Our first responders.
Our first responders are good teachers. And we are just destroying our society here from within, which is exactly the plan.
And you know, okay, so, and full disclosure, we are a first responder family, right?
Right.
So almost everybody in our family has something to do with law enforcement, fire department, forensics. Okay, almost everybody, and including us. And did you ever think, I get it about picking on the cops, because everybody has picked on the cops forever. But look what's happening now with the fire department, firemen, firewomen, firefighters, and paramedics. They are wearing body armor now, and they're getting shot at. Their rigs, fire trucks, ambulances are being broken windows, vandalized, slit tires. Who would have ever thought that first responders would have this problem, you know?
Who would have ever thought, Ron, I never would have thought in my lifetime that I would see politicians releasing felons as they have been doing over and over and over, and to see the numbers of people and children being shot by felons that have just gotten out of jail. And, you know, you were talking about All Lives Matter. You had a young mother who got in an argument, word thing with somebody else.
Some Black Lives Matter people.
Some Black Lives Matter. And they said All Lives Matter. And, of course, the Black Lives Matter people didn't like that. They killed her. I mean, they shot her, and she's dead, and she had a three-year-old child.
But they don't care. But these people don't care because, you know, they've hijacked the entire movement. You know, in my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, and we'll tell our listeners how to get a copy of that book because it's flying off the shelves. We're in our third printing. And I said,
oh, no, we're in about our sixth printing.
Are we really? Well, you feel more with fulfillment than I do, but I feel blessed because of it. But anyway, in the book, I tell everybody about the foundations of the Black Lives Matter movement, serious Marxists, all of the founding members are avowed Marxist communists. And I talk about Assata Shakur. You know, you'll see these t-shirts that the BLM people will wear. It said, Assata taught me. She is a first degree murder convicted communist revolutionary from the Black Liberation Army, which was the most militant Black organization in the 70s, more violent than the Black Panther Party. Cop killers. She was convicted, escaped from prison, ended up in Cuba, and is still in Cuba, all right, because we don't have an extradition treaty. These are the people that the Black Lives Matter movement gravitates towards. Now, I've also said that there are people that are associates or maybe even some members in the Black Lives Matter movement are more idealistic, the more altruistic. They believe that there's systemic racism. They believe that the police are bad. These are the people that want to reimagine law enforcement and public safety. They're nice people. I think they're misguided. I think they're uneducated. But the real movers and shakers of the Black Lives Matter movement, absolute Marxist communist revolutionaries, anti-government, anti-democratic republic of the United States, anti-law enforcement, and if they have an opportunity, they will tear down and burn down our democratic republic and replace it with a black nationalist Marxist structure. And this is not Dr. Ron talking. I am quoting them from their own videos, their own publications. So I hope people will buy that book and educate themselves. But
so,
that's what you're dealing
with.
So
we've got those people coming at us one way. We've got the people in China coming at us a whole nother way. And
with the COVID.
You know, yeah, well, and with the COVID, which I'd like to talk about. And then, you know, there's just as an aside, before I get you your next cup of coffee.
I'm going for iced tea because it's pretty warm this evening.
It's really interesting right now what's happening in Iran with all of the destruction of all of their sites that have to do with nuclear weapons.
Well, that's it. And you know, let's talk about that in our third and final section of our coffee conversation, iced tea conversation. But I want people to know that they can get a hold of my book, which is now a bestseller, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. It's not on Amazon. Jeff Bezos took it off the bookshelf, so you can only get it through Dr. Ron's website, which is easy to remember. It's DR for Dr. Ron Martinelli, MartinelliI.com. And if you get that book, buy more than a couple of books, I will put a little present in there extra for you and let us know if you want the book personalized and autographed, and I'll be more than happy to do that. I'm ready for my iced tea.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DRRONMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice. Great glass of freezing cold iced tea. Thank you so much.
You're
welcome. It is so hot out there.
Okay.
We were talking about the state of decay in the city of New York, but you know, the city of New York is one of a number of very liberal, democratically run cities that are having serious issues
right
now. And of course, you and I talk about Chicago from time to time, and it just seems that every single weekend in the city of Chicago, there are just a large amount of shootings and killings. And so what I wanted to do is I went on to our favorite site for research, heyjackass.com.
And, it's a real site.
And it's a great site. I wish law enforcement had, but the FBI had a site as good as this one.
Because, well, I wish all the big cities had this site.
Yeah, and they're all vetted. And I mean, they have got some statistics that are just fantastic. I mean, you name it, and there's going to be a statistic on that site. So I just wanted to share a couple of things with you. So let me just run through some statistics.
Okay.
And I don't think they're going to be boring at all. I think they're actually going to be shocking to you, not to you necessarily, but certainly to our listeners and followers. So since the beginning of July, we've had 201 people shot and wounded and 44 people killed. And we are just beginning, all right? And we've already had that many people, all right? This past weekend, we had 39 people shot and 7 people killed. And I think you mentioned one was a 1-year-old boy and one was, what, a 14 6-year-old kid, or was he 11-year-old kid? I saw him on television, the father, and he had pictures of the kid.
That was a kid in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is that they're all over the country.
Right. Well, in Chicago, they've had 392 murders so far this year, and they have shot 1,969 people. And so, HeyJackass.com has something called the shot clock.
Right.
And so it's interesting to note that every 2 hours and 22 minutes, there is a person shot in Chicago, and there is a person killed every 12 hours. So basically, every single day, two people are killed, and probably 10, 12 people are shot. So, I mean, I think that's such an interesting statistic.
Well, New York is catching up. They've had a 600% increase in crime.
And that's what I'm talking about.
And amid that increase in crime, first of all, a lot of that, again, from releasing all of the felons from Rikers Island, and then you want to defund the police.
And did you notice that just this week, Gavin Newsom, the very leftist governor of the state of California, who's Nancy Pelosi's what, nephew?
Nephew.
Is releasing 8,000 prisoners from state prison.
That's just terrible.
Because of COVID. He says, I don't want them to catch COVID, so I'm going to release 8,000
violent
felons
crazy.
Out into the street.
Let them catch COVID if they're in prison, or make them wear masks, because if masks are good enough for you and I to wear, they're good enough for them to wear.
Right, exactly. So I want to get back into the shooting, because you know what the false narrative is that I've written about in my book. The police are shooting a disproportionate number of people of color, right? That's the narrative. So interesting to note, because I've got the officer-involved shooting statistics of Chicago, and I compared and contrast to the civilian shootings in Chicago. So officer-involved shootings so far this year, 7.
Oh, it hasn't changed for a while.
It hasn't changed since the last time we had a conversation. So no officer-involved shootings in the past couple of weeks. And they have killed 3 and they have wounded 4. But citizens in Chicago killing other citizens in Chicago, of which 93% are people of color. Okay, 77% are black and 16% are other people of color, Hispanics, Asians, something like that. And so citizens killing other citizens at a rate that is 131 times greater than officers shooting citizens. 131 times greater.
But where's the outcry? And we always say this, there is no outcry.
And then I want to do one more statistic and I'm going to shut up, okay? But Chicagoans shoot 20% more people than police officers do, and they kill 60% more civilians than police officers do, okay? In self-defense, right? Just in self-defense. So there's more citizens killing other citizens in justifiable self-defense that are people of color. They're shooting and killing people of color in self-defense, 20% greater wounding them and 60% greater killing them than law enforcement officers. So if you see that 131 times more than police officers, and self-defense shootings alone, 60% more deaths, civilians shooting other people of color.
Well, and then you take that all across the country to the areas that have violent crime, and it's the same everywhere. So, yeah, I feel really bad right now. And Chicago has been this way for a while. They don't seem to want to do anything about it.
No.
But New York has been a really good model, large city. And it's just going down the toilet right now with the mayor that they have. So, you know, I don't think he's up for re-election this time, but people just need to think about who they're voting for and what kind of quality of life they want.
Well, you know, there's been an outcry just this last week of people that want Governor Cuomo to relieve,
yes,
Bill de Blasio,
and I think he should,
who's the mayor, of his responsibilities with regards to his oversight on the NYPD. Not, you know, leaving the office of the mayor.
I think he should leave the whole office.
And I think the attorney general is looking into that with of the state of New York, of removing, and I guess there's something in the state charter that says that they can remove the mayor from having any oversight on the NYPD. So that's going to be interesting. That's a real political tug of war that I just want to be a fly on the wall, you know, to see how that's how
well,
that's
I hope that
done.
Somebody is stand up enough to do something instead of letting all of this happen. And this is everywhere. This is in San Francisco. It's in Los Angeles.
Oh, it's in Portland.
Chicago,
it's in Seattle.
Right.
And you know, because you mentioned the defunding we were talking about at the beginning of the show, and that is Bill de Blasio stopped the new police academy,
yes,
from starting, and that was what, Linda?
It was over a thousand.
Right. So there you go. And he removed $1.3 billion from the NYPD budget, which is about 15% of their budget. And they said, hey, we can't do that. You can't take 15% away from our budget.
Well,
we can't
and,
do anything.
And you had a officer who just was put in a chokehold by a bystander, and nothing was done to him. I mean, at this moment, and that may change, but they released him pending further investigation, despite the fact that there are videos, despite the fact
saw
that
the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he was a gang member. He wasn't just a bystander. He was a gang member that the officer attempted to arrest, and they got into a fight, and the guy put a chokehold on him. Now, there's another video where the officer is making an arrest and somebody comes in from behind. Is that the one you're referring to?
That's all the same event. And actually it was another bystander who grabbed the guy off the officer.
I saw that too. Yeah.
But for our totally impotent district attorneys to not press charges on this guy, I mean, and the departments, not the departments, but the cities that are reducing the crime of attacking an officer. I mean, come on. What are we doing here? What common sense people in this country have got to stand up and say something. I need to switch subjects.
Well, I see you're getting a little,
well, no,
a little hot under the collar
there.
I
need to switch because, you know, I want to talk, and we don't have that much time to talk about it, but this story about this this virologist from China that escaped in Hong Kong, and she got out and at much peril to herself and now her family who's left behind, because she was one of the first scientists who started working on COVID, and she
at the Wuhan lab over there?
Well, I don't know where she started working on it, but she was one of the scientists that started working on the research at the very onset of the pandemic. And she has come over, she says, to tell the truth, which is that China knew all along that it had human-to-human transmission and didn't say anything, and that they freely let people go on planes internationally, even though they closed down their local airports and planes to go anywhere locally. They let them leave internationally and spread this throughout the world
in a purposeful way. Wow.
And what she says that I find really concerning, because I am like a lot of people that I'm sure are listening right now that are so confused about all the mixed messages we get about coronavirus. And so many people I talk to say, oh my gosh, this is just the flu and this is baloney and this is no big deal and we're ruining our economy over this. And I totally agree that we are ruining our economy. We're ruining thousands and millions of lives with people being out of work, losing their companies, losing their jobs. I just think that this is a tragedy. But what she says that's so interesting to me is that China wanted, if they were going to suffer over this virus getting out, so was the rest of the world. They didn't want to be the only ones to have to pay a price for having this. And she also says that this is a very, very terrible virus, and this is not anything that we have seen before, because a lot of people are saying, oh, this is just like the flu. And she's saying, no, it's not. And she says, we have to get the real evidence and we have to stop this, and we don't have much time. And a part of me, Ron, like a lot of other people, is very concerned about that. And even though I talk to people all day long who say that I'm overreacting, I do think that there's something very evil about this particular virus and what it does to the human body and what the after effects are. And I want to hear her story, and I want to know more. And then we have the whole debate about the kids going back to school, but now governors nationwide are shutting down their states again, closing bars, closing everything, you know, gyms and restaurants and all these businesses that just cannot survive much longer. You know, and it's just such a tragedy.
And you know, the mental health issues are so huge, you know, and they even affect us a little bit. You know, this was supposed to be a big travel year for us. You know, we had, you know, plans to go back to Italy. We had plans to take a cruise to go to Ireland and, you know, Scotland and England. We were going to go up to Alaska. I mean, this was going to be a huge travel year for us because we had these opportunities available. And we're not doing any of these things. And, you know, today, one of our friends, you know, one of our close friends that has got a nice place in Maui, and I've never, I've been to Maui for, God, maybe 40 years. And he's been inviting us, what, for about 3 or 4 years to go to Maui. We finally said, okay, we're going, and we can go next month. And then he just let us know today.
They shut it down again?
He let us know this evening. I got a text message, and he goes, sorry, folks. You know, they're going to shut us down for a month beyond the month we were going.
Well, and this is the third time.
And we can't do it now because now I'm going into heavy trial, I mean, you know, heavy trial calendar and, you know, all of that.
And I'm okay with that if that's the least of my problems. But it, I mean, I worry more about, you know, our employees and our businesses, and as so many people do, this coronavirus has been such a devastating event in the country for so many reasons for so many people, and I just don't know how our economy is going to pull out of it. I do believe that once we pull out of it, those who make it through are going to be stronger, but so many, Ron, are not going to make it through. And you know, the money that they gave in the PPP loans, that was great for 3 months. That money is gone for virtually everybody. The 3 months is over.
Okay.
So now they're into their own pockets, and they cannot survive this. And now they have shut down everything again. So you're talking, here's what happened. They said that they could open. So restaurants started retraining people, rehiring people, buying uniforms, buying food, buying product. And now they've shut them down. They lose all of that. They lose all that training money. They lose all of that food that's going to spoil. This is not a small thing. And I don't know what the answer is, because I don't know what we all don't know, the truth about how dangerous this virus is.
You know, this is the most frustrating thing for me with a little bit of a medical background. I don't know who the heck to trust. I've never seen anything like this. We didn't see this with H1N1. We didn't see this with Ebola. We didn't see this with SARS. We haven't seen this before. And I can't help but believe that so much of this pandemic has been politicized, and that's what's going on. I get it that we're trying to learn about this particular virus, this particular pandemic, and I get it that we're behind the curve, but this backwards and forwards about masks, they're good, they're bad, who can contract, who doesn't contract, who transmits, who doesn't transmit, does it die in the heat, all the different, you know, understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, everything.
And the different pharmaceuticals, what the hell is the, you know, do we have the silver bullet? Some people are saying we've got, besides hydroxy chloroquine.
Yeah, the silver bullet would be more of an asthma type drug, which right. I think would work really great in the lungs.
Well, because it's
steroidal.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
I think that would work really well.
But do you see the confusion?
Yes, everybody's confused. I'm confused. I don't know what to believe. And I think that everybody feels that same way. And you know what else breaks my heart is we are going to be grandparents.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
For the first time, and with twins.
And another one. Okay, so it's twins from our one son.
Daughter-in-law.
Okay, and daughter-in-law. And then another one from our other boy.
Yeah, so the two boys. Right. The two boys are pregnant, one with twins, one with a single baby, and all coming at the same time. But the guys cannot go in with their wives to see the ultrasounds and I know that their heart is broken because they don't get to see their baby and experience those joyful moments. They do not even get to go into the doctor's office with their wives.
They may not be able to be participatory with the birthing. Right? With the birthing. They won't even get to watch that on TV or something.
No, they have to be. This is just crazy. You cannot do this to people's lives. This is just one of the biggest things in their whole entire life. So there are so many things that are happening to people, and it's heartbreaking. So,
well, let's talk about how people can listen to Talking While Married.
Well, they can get on AmericaOutloud.com. And they will see lots of live shows all day long, all night long. You can listen to all the different hosts. And you can listen to Dr. Ron and Linda on AmericaOutloud.com or any of your favorite apps.
iHeartRadio,
right.
Apple, Spotify.
Yep.
There's all sorts of different ones.
And you can grab all of those apps, you know, right there from America Out Loud.
Exactly.
Yeah, they'll tell you exactly what to do.
And you can get them on your smartphone. All of these things, you can get them on your smartphone, any smart device. Don't forget that America Out Loud has some phenomenal authors. We have a bookstore on America Out Loud, has all of our books. And if you don't see the books because they keep, it's a rotation thing, then type in. So like if you're looking for my book, the Black Lives Matter book, then just type in like Dr. Ron Martinelli or Black Lives Matter, and that book's going to pop right up. Don't forget that Linda Martinelli writes columns. She's a great columnist for America Out Loud. And you can find us also, if you miss this program, you can go on to podcast and it's open in the cloud 24/7.
Right. You can listen to us anytime you want. You can just listen all day long.
Okay. You ready to call it?
I'm ready.